Three, two, one. Hello and welcome to episode 80 of Ruse Radio. We are back at it again with a very special guest. Special guest has his own radio show. What? Special guest, please introduce yourself, my friend.
Hi, I'm Adam Harahuck from Solid State Radio. I host a show called Sessions, which tips the cap to Michigan-made music.
Now, how do you do that? Tell me about, like, what is the MO of your radio show? Like, how do you approach it, and how do you select music? How does that all go?
I started the show with the idea that it wasn't going to be just unsigned bands. It wasn't going to be just people getting started. It was going to be a lot of that, but it was also going to be, I wanted people to say, oh, wow, Was Not Was was from Michigan. Del Shannon's from Michigan. And of course, play Motown, Sponge, Pop Evil. Basically, if they're from Michigan, they count. I always tailor make the show to the listener, not the musicians. If the musicians listen to the show and they enjoy it, I appreciate it, but I go for the listener. I want them to say, oh, okay, I heard a Sponge song that I really like. Maybe the next band or the next artist I hear could be the next Sponge, so I'm going to keep listening.
I see. And so it's kind of just based on this curiosity and this inspiration that you find in the music that's around, and just like the I guess one idea that I had recently that I really like to think about is that what people trust artists for and creators for is curation. And that's kind of what you're doing there. You're curating the music, and they're trusting your curation. They're trusting that this guy, if he can find this, he's going to be able to help me find the next thing that I'm going to love. If I find one thing he loves, this guy can curate good stuff. I'm going to see what he can come up with next.
Well,
you know what I mean?
I certainly try. I don't look at it. I rarely ever look at it, say, would I listen to this? Do I like this? It's from Michigan. If it's well done, I'll play it. I play a lot of music that I wouldn't necessarily sit in my car and listen to, but that's just it. I'm the curator. I'm not here going to tell people, hey, this is what I like. This is what you're supposed to like. I just present it and leave it up to the listener to decide.
Interesting.
Like, I don't listen to like death metal and stuff like that. But even though I recognize the extreme talent in it, I'll still play it.
Like, now, is it? I would ask then. Is there still maintenance of quality in that regard? Because if you don't like a certain type of music, it's not like you're going to play music that you dislike. Correct? Like, mm-hmm. It would still right. be like, you're going to listen to it and be like, ah, this is something I would be into, but I can see the yeah. talent in this.
When a song is submitted to me, I look at the recording of it. We live in a day right now where things can sell professional so easily, to where if it sounds like it's not recorded right, quote unquote right, I'll probably steer away from that. I also steer away from any songs that are about ultra-violent, sexist, racist, stuff like that. I'm pious, not that I try to decide what to think for other people. I kind of don't want to give an avenue for somebody who's overtly racist.
Well, and going back to the curation thing, like, yeah. what would that say about your curation if that's the type of thing that you would be
yeah.
curating? It
right.
just would say, it would reflect on you in that way.
And Solid State Radio and 97.7 WTGV were also heard. So, you know, I gotta think in those terms as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of that's a thought I've always had, is I'll interview anybody, but then it becomes a question of, like, who's going to advertise the guy that interviews
right.
anybody?
Right.
So, that yeah, I mean, but I believe in art. I believe in conversation, and so it becomes tough when you start drawing lines around it. So it's a careful dance. Like, if somebody is doing something that's sexist, I have to look into, like, what is the art? Is the art saying something? Are people getting something from it? And is me putting that on promoting it, or is it creating a conversation? And there's so many conversations I get into, but when you look at it through the idea of curation and
right.
like, what am I putting on and what am I promoting,
well,
that,
I mean,
it becomes a simple thing.
I mean, it can be just as simple as politics. Like, I consider myself to be a bleeding heart liberal.
Yeah.
And yet there's bands out there that will put out songs that are very pro-right wing, And I'm not going to steer away from that because it doesn't go with my politics.
So, right.
But, you know, I also have to kind of tread lightly if they're going against another race or sex or if they identify for the LGBTQ community, you know, I kind of got to be careful about that.
Yeah. And I guess it's that then it becomes that whole conversation about separating the art from the artist and all that. I mean, I think that's kind of, I had a great conversation with someone on the podcast here, Cameron Tyler, where we were talking about how the artist, it's kind of up to them to separate those different parts of themselves and not to just put everything out all at once, because that can be what throws people off. So I think a lot, some of the separating the art from the artist is actually up to the artist. And as an artist, you have to recognize, like, what is my goal as an artist? How do I want to represent myself to everyone?
Right.
There'll be this artist who's their music is all about peace and love and having a great time, and they're out there talking shit about these different communities, and it's like, well, now it's hard for me to enjoy your art because you're not saying the same thing in these two different places. It's confusing me. Like their persona when they're going out and talking politics is way different than their persona as a musician, and that's the type of thing that I think really throws a lot of people off too. It's
agreed.
The artist, it's up to the artist. You can't confuse people like that.
Right.
Like, just be real. Just be real all the time. You know, if you're a super chill person, be that chill person. But if you're not, it shows. So, yeah, there's so much music that, there's only a little bit of political music that I can think of that I really do enjoy when I think about that. I don't know about you. And I would say Rage Against the Machine.
Sure.
Fantastic. I mean, you can't go wrong. System of a Down's got quite a bit of political content. I think their political music's great. There's a rapper that made quite a few political songs. He was like a storytelling rapper. He did the song Dance with the Devil, Impractical Technique.
Mm-hmm.
Is that his name? Am I getting it right?
No, I'm it doesn't ring a bell. They're not from Michigan, so I have no idea.
Okay. Right. Listen, my bubble's real small. I'm not the guy to ask.
So Beach Boys, huh? Okay, I'll look them up.
Yeah. Beach, never seen one. No. That's funny, man. I mean, like, you do listen to music outside of Michigan, though.
Of course,
though.
I do. Yeah, of course I do.
Like, you went to Chicago. Are you familiar with the Chicago rap scene at all?
Yes.
I'm not. I don't know much of it.
I know more about the legendary blues scene that's out of Chicago.
Tell me about that.
Oh, even. I can't really know exact names. I just know that Chicago is really known for its blues. And when my wife and I went there a couple years ago, right around her birthday, we heard some blues coming out of some of the bars and stuff like that. It is some fantastic stuff out of there. It's a great music scene over in Chicago. You're gonna have a great time.
I think that. Well, you asked me before we started the podcast why I'm going there, and a lot of it is just that I can feel that. I can feel an energy in the air that would obviously flow into music well. Because people are just more supportive and charismatic in that type of places. It's what I experience every time I go there. People seem more lifted up than they are around here, where I'm used to. Even just the entire mid-Michigan area, like Flint. Especially, but even in surrounding areas, people aren't really excited to go out to shows and do things. And somewhere like that, you can tell they would. And it's just a whole different type of atmosphere you'd have as a musician on a stage.
Right.
If I'm controlling that, man, that's what I was supposed to be in front of this whole time. I know it. So, but it's. I'm glad. I got to become a Jedi throughout all my training here, and now I'm just going there as a Jedi Master. So it's gonna go well. I think there's probably a lot, like I was talking to you about travel beforehand, though. There's probably a lot of the world that I could go to and shine in that I don't know about. It's just that Chicago is some place that I'm familiar with that...
It's not going to be a big culture shock because it is still part of the Midwest.
Exactly.
But it's bigger, more culture.
There's so much more culture.
Yeah. So, and you're right about the people. They seem to be friendlier, confident... I'm sure there's rude people in Chicago. It's not like her and I were walking around talking to people, but the people we did talk to, very friendly. And I was worried because I'm a big Red Wings fan, and I walked around with a Red Wings hat, and I thought I was going to get beat up or something like that. But no, they were real chill.
Well, what always blows my mind is how chill they are. That's why I say all that. It actually confuses me. This is how I like to put it, is it throws me off. Because, like, around here, you know, I'll show somebody a song. They'll just probably, okay, no. This is a bad example because this is just theoretical. I'll give you a better example. So around here, I walk into a store and I'm getting a coffee. And I say to the person behind the coffee thing, like, thank you so much. Hey, what's a good place to go to nearby here?
Yeah.
And the person behind the register here would say something like, just go down the street. There's a shop right there. Okay? But the person in Chicago is going to be like, just go down the street. There's a shop right there. Me and my sister went there last year, and they had this thing, and there was balloons popping and all this. And my sister actually broke her foot, and we had to take her to the hospital. It was crazy. It was a whole... Like, they'll tell you a whole story when you ask them the right question is what I'm saying.
Well, one thing about Chicago as opposed to Flint or even Detroit is economics. Flint is still very much a depressed kind of area when it comes to economics, and people are just kind of bummed out as a whole.
Yeah, the entire energy in the air just contributes to that attitude that we're describing, for sure. Yep.
I mean, I had something similar. My wife and I, we went there for Chicago-style pizza. Basically, it was her birthday. She says, I want Chicago-style pizza. I'm like, okay, honey, I want to go to Chicago. All right, for my birthday. Like, all right, next thing you know, we're on a train. We're going to Chicago. But we talked to somebody at the hotel. I was like, yeah, we're going to go to this place. For Chicago, he's you want to go here? And they do this, and they do that, they do this. And it was like what you're saying.
He gave you a whole story.
Yeah,
they always do that.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's like, do you work for them? It's like, no, it's just really good pizza.
So I was applying for jobs the last time I was there, and the boss of this one place, like the manager, he comes up and he gave me a list of other places to apply to nearby, and he said if I was a server, I'd apply to all these places. Like He didn't have to do all that, but he just did that because they just want to share information. Like, for some reason, and it's almost like they just believe more. I don't even know. Like, that's why I say it almost makes me suspicious. Like, why are they trusting me with all this?
Right. Yeah, I know. The cynicism that comes with it.
Like, why?
Living in this area is like, why are you being so nice to me?
Right.
You don't want to hire me, and that's what this is all about, isn't it?
Dude, it's so funny. And I guess it's, the more I think about it, the more it just kind of breathes more life into me, I suppose. Because I realize, like, they're not, that's just people being nice. People are just being legitimately nice. That's how people are there. And people just aren't like that in a place like this. And I can't even experience that here. It's impossible.
Right.
You just have to get out and experience other things. That's why I think a lot of people like to go to the South and they like to go to Florida, or they'll go to, I would say LA, but I don't think LA is the place to be if you're trying to get a better mindset.
No.
LA seems kind of stressful. It seems like that would kind of turn you the wrong way. But I feel like the South, you could have a nice laid back lifestyle. You'd see a whole lot of fun. How do I put it? What do they call
personalities? Tailgates. Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah, they know how to party in the South.
Yeah, you'll see some tailgates, you'll see some kegs, you'll see some stuff. I mean, like, honestly, if you're an open-minded person and you're just if you're not worried about the politics of it, you'll have a great time in the South.
Sure.
Like, if you're not worried about who you disagree with and who you agree with,
yeah,
doesn't matter where you are. You can find great people anywhere. That's how I look at it. So I would love to be in the South. I would love to be anywhere, man.
Yeah, right.
I want to go to I would go to Mexico, but I'm worried about getting my head on a hanging from a bridge on a street. Like,
yeah.
There's some places I just can't go.
Yeah, they warn you about being over Mexico, and they'll tell you, don't get into a cab that's not marked a cab, don't do this, don't
what?
Do that.
I didn't know it was that bad.
Certain areas, yeah, it certainly can be.
Wow.
Yep.
So, yeah, exactly. Like, you need a real travel guide some places you go.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I'm one of those guys where I would love to at least be in North Korea once, but I know for a fact I can't actually do that.
Yeah, that'd be a really rough thing. I'd be on a TV, you know, being held hostage or something like that. Hello, Mr. President. Please send money.
Right. Well, you know what it makes me think of is that kid, that college kid who they said that it was because he took down a sign or something like that.
Yeah.
And there was a video of him doing it with the sign. But the thing that most people don't think about is the way the media frames things and all this. Like, it's North Korea. Somebody could have just told that guy, hey, you have to go and take down this sign or else North Korea is going to arrest you. And so he's following someone's instructions. And then they frame him anyways. Like, the entire thing was him getting framed. It could have been anything.
Right.
And North Korea was just using that kid as an example. And that could be any of us.
Yep.
So just don't go there.
Yeah.
Just don't. Ric Flair was talking about how he went to North Korea on Joe Rogan's podcast. That was an interesting story.
Yeah.
Because I just never even knew. I didn't know Ric Flair went there. He went there and fought some, I think he fought a, I want to say Japanese wrestler.
Okay.
Could have been Chinese. Do you know which one North Korea hates? It's whichever one North Korea hates more.
North Korea really hates South Korea. They hate really Japan.
Japan. He fought some Japanese wrestler, and it was a whole thing. They wanted him to announce that that North Korea could defeat America. He was saying, "No, I can't say all this." He was trapped in North Korea. It's a crazy story.
North Korea, they keep their people so much in the dark that during the Olympics, they're like, "Well, we didn't bother televising the Olympics in North Korea because North Korea won all the medals."
Yeah. Yeah.
And the North Korea people, they have no choice but say, "Oh, good for us. All right, we did it. Woo, go North Korea."
Yeah, the movie The Dictator, Kim Jong-un saying that he doesn't have a butthole.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got to take his word for it.
Yeah, Kim Jong-il, his first time golfing, according to him, he got four holes in one.
Yeah, I believe it, okay? I'm not, are there eyewitnesses? Are they saying yes?
Yeah, I'm sure they are. Like, did you hit the windmill?
Hey, man, I did that in mini golf once, okay?
Yeah.
I feel like it's one of those things that makes you think about life, too, and just the fact that those are all people. They all grew up in that place.
Yep.
And it really is a matter of perspective. Like, you don't know how trapped they know that they are and how much of that they think is reality. It's a very crazy thing to be
they're not allowed
stuck
to see
in that type of
newspapers, television. They don't get the internet or anything like that. They have no idea what's outside of North Korea. So, you know.
There must be some sense, though. There must be some sense of, like, hey, you realize this. There's more to the world than this. Like,
right.
Wow. Because, I mean, I think even their calendar is wild. Even their calendar, I think they say that it started like 150, 200, 300 years ago.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Imagine somebody walks up to you and they say, you know it's 2023, right? You're like, no, it's not. It's year 230 Kim Jong AD. What are you talking about?
Okay.
That's what he said on the TV last night. He said it was 2 years later than it was last week. Did not
hear? Every 60 days is New Year's Eve on there.
You got to keep checking just to make sure you know what day it is.
What's the year again?
Everybody's changing the clock. Like, oh, shit. It's nighttime now?
Sun's out. No, Kim Jong-un will sell it. It says nighttime. Good night.
He's changing all it right. up.
Because he just uses the whole country as his own snooze alarm. See, I need to get some more sleep.
In my depraved mind, like, if I was the leader of that country, that's the type of stuff I'd be doing. I would really be doing some social experiments.
I would be irresponsible.
Oh, me too. That's why I shouldn't be a leader anywhere.
Yeah.
I'll say that on the podcast. Last episode, literally like one or two, I think the very last episode, I was saying I'm going to run for president with one. Contradicting myself.
I have too many skeletons to run for treasurer of a township, much less anything else.
Oh, well, that's what I always say is they're gonna get me. They'll get me. Like, they'll find my skeletons I didn't even know I had. That's my problem.
Wow, I did that? All right.
I'll be like, yeah, I did do that. Come on. Yeah,
well, I mean, they have a lot of, I have a lot of hours of radio they could turn on me real quick.
Oh, dude, this episode. They'll find something in here. They got both of us.
Yeah, we're both fucked.
Yeah, so that, yeah, it kind of amazes me that people even manage to run for office. Like, how do you not say everything everywhere? I spill the beans all the time. That's why I'm good for radio.
Sure, sure.
Just say everything.
Well, I mean, when it comes to politics, I think we have a really effed up idea that we expect somebody who's running, let's say for U.S. president, that they have to be pure as the driven snow. They can't have any kind of problems, no kind of foibles with their lives. Nobody's perfect. We can't expect somebody to be perfect. So we find out, oh, they're divorced, or they cheated on their taxes, or they did this. They're not fit to be president. You're kind of thinking about it. I'm thinking those people are thinking in the wrong context. We need somebody who's not perfect.
Well, and we're all flawed. You know, we get this sense that people shouldn't be flawed when we're all flawed ourselves. So it's just a silly way to be looking at things in the first place.
Very true.
How can you not? I mean, every single relationship is you just deciding how many flaws you're willing to put up with. So.
Yeah, it's like, okay, yeah, she eats crackers in bed, but she's really hot.
No, for real. It's everything. So, I mean, when you put things in those terms, I think that things can become a lot simpler for a lot of people, right? It's like, that's why politics, you know, you say, well, we're voting for the two worst people. Well, like, okay, find people with less flaws that we can all pick. Like, that's, you can't present the problem. You got to present a solution. Like, we all have flaws, so we just need better flawed people.
Correct.
Well, yeah, the people we got right now are pretty flawed. Man, the country's pretty wild right now. I'll just say that much. Yeah, yeah. So with my politically correct way of putting things, it actually amazes me. America, it's like a house of cards. Like, it's a good way of putting it. It's just holding itself up very carefully. It's kind of amazing. It's kind of why I want to jump to Chicago real quick. Like, yeah, I wonder how long this house of cards is going to hold up. Because we only got, as we record this podcast, it's not election season, but it's coming up. We're in the calm before the storm, and we don't even realize it, man. It's about to get bad out here in these streets. I like this right now.
Yeah.
I think that people just get too engaged, you know? It's like, yeah, it matters, but you get too engaged, and you lose that sense of humanity that we all see in one another.
Yeah.
No.
Well, here I go. I'm not going to blame social media, because social media is a tool. It's how we use it. But it's ever since social media happened, it has made people think that the world needs to know my view on politics.
Well, you know what it does is it creates, because even larger than politics, even larger than that, it creates a soapbox for people to stand on, and everybody feels like their opinion is elevated because they post it and all their friends like it. Like, real life's nothing like that. There's never a point in time when I say something and then a bunch of people respond because I said the right thing and the right combination of words. Like, that's very rare.
Yeah.
That's not.
Yeah, it's usually when you say the bad thing, then the next thing you know, they're just piling on you. Like, I played in bands for 25 years. There's certain musicians that I was in bands with for years, decades. And I didn't realize that they were like a staunch Republican. And I'm not. But now, because of social media, he's popping off about this issue and this issue. It's like, wow, he's kind of an a-hole. But wait a minute. I hung out with that guy for so long.
Well, in social media, if it weren't for that, you probably wouldn't even care about that aspect of his personality, which is the other strange part about it. Like, you wouldn't even, you would think about it the same exact way you used to think about it. Like, oh, that guy was a cool guy. Like, you wouldn't even have that part of the perspective. And that's what's so strange about it, too, is that it exaggerates these parts of us. And yeah, I think that one problem with that soapbox thing is that while we're on that, we try to boil ourselves down to these concepts when deep down we're way more than anything, any particular thought that we think.
Right.
Like, it doesn't matter what your politics are in any given moment when it comes to who you are as a human being. You're so much bigger than that.
Yes.
Like, unless you're straight up out here hurting people physically, like if you're causing physical harm in real life, like, what damage are you really doing? And I just think, you know, as human beings, we're all worth so much more. And we boil ourselves down, we boil others down to these individual moments because of social media, because we're taught, hey, whatever you say on this post, whatever you do on this video is going to stand on forever. So be careful what you say and do. And that's not real life. I try not to go on these rants because I blame social media for a lot of our societal ailments, because it really has just, it's backed a lot of people up.
Yep.
We all got this pent up emotion and this pent up socialization because we do it all wrong.
Yeah. Well, it's given us a false sense of importance because, I mean, Facebook, they'll say, what are you doing today? How are you today? And you post something, like I'll post like a joke or something like that, and I'll get like 50 people liking it. I'm thinking, I'm pretty damn funny.
Me too, though. I say that entire rant I just said, and I do the same thing. I go, yo, I should do another joke like this in 2 days. It's good content.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So,
it is what it is. We're all in the same world. Like, at a certain point, you just have to accept it and work within those parameters, I suppose. But
sure, but I mean, Facebook also gives me an opportunity for my show sessions to learn about different acts, different bands, different artists.
That's how I contact everybody get on this show for the most part.
I'll go down that rabbit hole where, okay, I'm following this band, Flowers on the Grave, and then I learned about this band, Possum Belly. Then I learned about this band, or a band, a venue will be playing some artists or something like that, and I'll check them out like that. I am lurking all over Facebook. I'm a stalker.
You're going down Facebook rabbit holes.
Oh, yeah. Big time, all the time.
But that's how you do your research.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah, a lot of bands will be like, how did you hear about us? You were playing Smalls over at Hamtramck, and I checked you out, and I like what you like what I heard. So Facebook has, like I said, it's not bad, it's not good. It's a tool. It's how the how an individual uses it.
Well, that's the best way to look at it, as a tool, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the only reason I really post is to usually, generally, either keep a memory or share a piece of, to just share a piece of a content and get more people to see it. Simple as that.
Right.
I suppose also for networking, but I'm just for strictly for posting purposes, that's what it is. And then I try to limit scrolling even because that's not a tool. Then I'm using it for leisure. So I try to recognize that for what it is. Sometimes as I'm scrolling, I'll find things that are actually useful as a tool, but it's not. It's probably like a good 5% out of the 95% of posts I see. It's not worth the risk. I'm wasting time I could be using for my art. And that's what yes. I always realize. And I mean, being out there and looking for people's art is really a big part of the research. I think that's why people are so surprised when they ask those questions, is because you're the guy who's willing to do it. Like, they just don't come across those guys a lot of the time.
Right.
Like, when I was doing my 60 Seconds With show, it wasn't like this. Like, I was preparing full-on interviews for these people because it was an interview show.
Sure.
I'm showing up, I'm doing a 15, 20-minute interview, and then I'm cutting that down to 60 seconds. That's what it was, essentially. And so I had to come in prepared. And I remember I would go back and I'd watch the earliest things of theirs I could find. I would try to, like, think of questions that, like, about certain lyrics maybe, or about certain things that maybe just made me think.
Sure.
Yeah, I would use my creativity to come up with the questions rather than just asking the basic, like, how you get into music and this and that. Like, you can ask those questions, but you also want to have other questions to expand upon their potential as a musician, I suppose. Like, they go deeper than whatever it is they're presenting, and they want to share that. They just don't know how,
right,
in every medium, and it's up to you as the interviewer to pull it out of them. And that's a fun thing.
When I interview bands, I don't have a whole list of questions. I have a couple things I want to check on, but then the big thing about interviewing is to listen. Okay, I'm going to ask about this song, but then they're going to say something that's going to tweak my interest about something else. I try to steer away from the normal band questions. How'd you get your name? How'd you guys meet? Blah, blah, blah. A lot of that stuff, because people have heard that. They've heard that kind of stuff before. And a lot of times it's not really that interesting. So I used to go in there with a big list of questions, but now I'm just kind of 4 or 5 questions.
Yeah.
But then listening, because then that they will, your guest will steer you in the right direction.
They will. Let me quickly pause real quick. Sure. Just to make sure I left my dog inside. I hear a dog outside barking just like him. And it wouldn't be unlike me. Come on, Oscar. There he is. Wow, what a good boy he is.
He's a good boy.
By the house the whole time.
Here you go.
Come on, buddy. Come on, buddy.
Yeah, hello.
Sorry about that. I locked you out for a minute, Oscar.
Hello, Oscar.
Hey, come on, mister. Come on.
We're in the middle of a production.
All right. Good thing I remembered that.
Yeah.
The thought popped in my brain. But on the thread that you were on.
Yes.
I 100% agree. I think it's all about the... Because it goes beyond just the rules of the interview, too. This is something that you can't really teach people. They have to learn through experience, where it's like, yeah, the rhythm that the person presents to you, it's almost like a dance. And they're giving you a rhythm, and you have to go off of that. And that's why some interviews just don't go well, because you can go into it thinking, oh, I'm going to interview them like this, and then they present a whole different rhythm, and you don't go off. Like, it's just like you guys didn't sync up. You see that a lot of the time.
You'll
in a lot
crash
of bad
and burn
interviews.
if you're not in tune with it, because I've heard some people try to interview, and if their interviewee is trying to stray away from the conversation, that they bring them back. And you don't want your guests to ramble either. Like, I interviewed Mike Skill from the Romantics, like one of my high-profile people I've ever interviewed. And he started rambling a little bit, because, I mean, he's such an interesting guy, and he's got so many stories. I kind of had to like, all right, let's corral that in a little bit.
Yeah, no, but that's okay. So one thing that I've gotten to learn a little bit more is that people with especially, and I know this is going to happen more and more, the more and more I do this and the bigger and bigger it gets, is that people with bigger personalities, bigger with bigger social media followings, they're more and more likely to do that because they're more and more, they're more likely to be deeply engaged with whatever it is their artistry is. Like, they've got 60,000 followers. They're coming on this podcast. Yep. They know what they're trying to get at. And so they're ready to go on that 10, 15-minute monologue that touches on 20 different topics.
Yeah. So they have their commercials.
You got to be very, very ready for those people. And it's a different experience than just bringing in the dude that you met at the bar and being like, want to be on my podcast? That's a different one, because it's almost better to do that second one first just to get the groundwork in, just to get those, you know, it's kind of like doing reps before you do the actual boxing match.
Right.
But I really do feel like when that happens, it's what I've learned, the best thing you can do is, I don't know, just like take... It all depends on the context of the interview first, because what are we doing here? Do we have 15 minutes? Do we have 30 minutes? That time is probably the first most fundamental thing. Like, how much time do we have to represent this? Because something like this, we can ramble on about whatever we want.
Sure.
We can talk about anything. It doesn't matter in a podcast. That's why I love it. Mm-hmm. We can just have a brand new thought experiment in the middle of the podcast.
Do we start talking about music? Next thing you know, we talk about broccoli soup. Oh, I'll have to try that.
Yeah. And then people in the comments are going off about broccoli soup. It's a beautiful thing.
Grandma used
thing.
To make a great broccoli soup. I miss my grandma. Let's talk about grandmothers for a little bit.
So with something like this, very loose.
Yes.
Very loose. But even here, you will see that, because say I have somebody come in and it's somebody that is a straight up really talented musician that I want to talk to about their art. And they start talking about broccoli soup. And they're talking about it for 5 minutes. I have to stop them at some point. I can't let that happen. No. So, yeah, there's levels to it for sure. It's all context, and it's all like, it's also, you know, this podcast isn't very targeted. The show isn't very targeted, but there's plenty of shows that are. Sure. So say it is something where it's about marriage. It's about divorce. Say you have a divorce podcast.
Right.
Well, you're not going to be straying too far off the beaten path at that point.
No.
So I can't even imagine what it's like wrangling those shows and stuff like that. I mean, I'm glad to have the medium that I do, because...
Yeah.
That sounds difficult. I'm not that kind of host.
Yeah.
I'm a loose guy. I like that we can do it like this.
Sure.
It's fun.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, have you ever had a lot of times, have you ever had a difficult time, I should say, wrangling an interview back into?
No. I've been very fortunate to where I haven't had too many guests give me any kind of problems or not be able to let me wrangle them in. They've always been very open and positive. The only time I had a band come in and they sent the drummer. Now, I'm not disparaging drummers. They're very important, but they sent the drummer who didn't write any of the music, he wasn't even in the band that long. So all my questions were like, well, tell me about this song. Oh, I don't know. I'm just a drummer. And that was the entire show. I mean, we salvaged it. I made conversation more about him as opposed to the band, but other than that, all the bands and artists that I bring into the show have been fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember the toughest 60 seconds interview I ever had was...
Oh, yeah?
It was... Okay, so the show is 60 seconds, so it's going to be short. Maybe that's why it was like this, but never did this ever happen. Because I always prep people beforehand. I would always say, it's a normal interview. Answer it like you normally would answer any questions. Like, I tell them, make sure to answer it completely normal. Don't try to shorten your answers, because that's what makes it work. It's an editing thing.
Yep.
I'm cutting down everything you said to 60 seconds. Don't try to shorten your answer yourself.
Right.
So this guy, I would say, what do you love about music? And he would say, the vibe.
That's it.
Yeah.
The vibe. Okay.
I got like 1 to 10 word answers on every question, and I only asked like 10. I actually struggled to make that a 60 second episode because
slow
it was so
down
short.
The vibe.
Yeah. And also, I always told people to recap. That was the other bit of prep I would always have to do, is like, so listen, I can't really pop the question on screen. It doesn't work as well if I do that. So if you recap the question and your answer, that's the best way to do it.
There, yep.
It, which genius piece of advice if you're ever doing this type of thing, by the way, because it's like if I say, what's your favorite color? You say, my favorite color is blue.
What's my favorite color? Great question.
Not even that. You say, my favorite color is blue. So it sounds like you're just saying what your favorite color is.
Gotcha.
Because that way, there's no... It seems like what always happened, the beauty of that, is that it would always come out like they're just talking for 60 seconds straight. It sure. doesn't even seem like any questions were asked because they just say, oh, yeah, I did this when I was growing up. My favorite color is blue. I like looking at the stars.
Everybody's just like, is he okay?
Every single episode is like a dating profile.
I like sunsets. I like walks on the beach. Candlelight dinners.
Man, I've really strongly been considering bringing that show back because people have enlightened me. It was ahead of its time. It was really like it was a fast-paced editing thing. It was basically an advertisement. The only reason I quit doing them is because it took too much work. This podcast is basically what those were. Because, yeah. I mean, I imagine I do it for the same reasons that you do what you do. I love to highlight local talent. I love to bring... I've learned that what makes me feel better than anything is shining my light onto others in any way that I can.
Sure.
And that provides me an avenue to do that.
Right.
I'm able to bring people from my area and bring people that I can see, that I can provide some type of avenue for them to show their content, right?
Sure.
I can give them this. And if I can, then I should be doing that. And it almost just feels like I'm fulfilling something, like I'm supposed to be doing that. And I right. love doing it more than anything. I love doing these podcasts for that reason. I loved doing the interviews for that reason. It just kind of, it gives a purpose to the entire creative process in a way that a lot of things simply cannot.
Right. Makes sense.
I mean, would you say that you feel that way at all? Or would you say that your intent with your radio show is from a different place?
It's kind of a hybrid because I come in with an idea and there's a finish line that I want to get to. I want to promote somebody's stuff. I want to talk about their music. But at the same time, if we end up talking about something completely different, not completely different, I guess, instead of talking about their music, we can also talk about things that went wrong when they're playing live or something like that. Funny stories when they tour or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, I guess it's both column A and column B.
Well, I suppose what I'm really saying, though, is beyond just the fact that it's a podcast, just the idea of giving artists a platform.
Like, yes.
Do you think about it in that way?
Yes. Yeah, oh, absolutely. A lot of bands... And artists, they're very appreciative of the opportunity for another way to promote their music because they work hard on that stuff.
I find that too, man. They, like, people come in and they're actually like more appreciative than you would have even expected. They're very excited to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's very gratifying.
I haven't had to really beg too many people. There's a couple people that I'd ask them a couple times to come on the show and the trail grows cold. And I'm like, all right, I'll just go ahead and leave that one alone then. I guess, but...
Yeah, well, those people, I've just learned that if that's what's happening, I mean, just let it go, and just those, it's that person. You can't control everybody with an interview. I mean, it is what it is. If they didn't want to, it just, what kind of sucks about it is then it becomes, well, now we're sitting here in this studio. What are we doing?
Right.
So it becomes that. But, yeah, I love that feeling. That feeling is very gratifying because it's just cool. It's cool to provide that for people. And what I've learned, too, about that is that, for one, it does it for me. As an artist myself, I can do it for myself by doing this show. I'm allowed to speak in a way that I can't normally speak and give the audience a piece of myself they wouldn't normally get. And,
right.
and they can connect with my music in a different way now because of that and all of my art because of that. And... So there's that, but there's also the fact that most artists don't have that. And that's what I know because that's what I'm providing for myself.
Right.
Most artists don't understand even how to set up a camera and to begin talking about themselves and to begin sharing their process. And, oh, hey, this is what I did last summer. And, oh, hey, this is just a story. Like, they don't know how to do that.
Right.
And so they have the interviewer as the dance partner and to bring them in and just give them that opportunity, especially when you're a good dance partner. Like, the person feels so good because they walk out of there like, yo, like, I would show that to anybody. And that's a piece of me that I could show to somebody. I don't have that I can't do that myself. Like, they don't know how.
Right.
And so it just feels so good to give that exactly. to people. Exactly. Because they need it. They need it. Like, I want to get interviewed. I wish I would ask you to have me on the show, but I'm about to head out to Chicago. Yeah, I might have to make a train trip back here to still appear.
Yeah, come on over. We'll get you on that. Because I didn't realize that. I just put two and two together pretty much today that I've been playing your stuff for quite some time now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, believe me, I remembered. Yeah. I remembered. I was, I think we mentioned it right before we started recording here that, yes, in a recent episode, I realized in real time that... Well, not even realized, it's just a memory of mine that, yes, Sessions. I think it was Jackman Raps, that's what I wanted to say, but somebody mentioned you, and they mentioned Sessions Radio, and I just, I go back and I look at my name on there, and I get real excited, man. I'm like, hey, that was me. That was one of the first times that I had ever been... Because I didn't reach out to you or anything like that.
I just
got acknowledged.
Yep.
You were in the rabbit hole. Yeah.
So I think somebody had shared it. That's also on my friends list. I think that's how I came up because I started playing your track Masterpiece, which you played me something new today and you said you're going to send that to me.
Yes.
Pinky swear that you're going to send it to me?
Pinky swear.
Okay. All right.
Masterpiece, Peace the Master. That's my thesis. That's how that song went. I really liked even then, because that song is years ago now, but
yeah, it's been a while.
I've always written my raps real philosophically, and even that line right there, man, it really hits my noggin in a good way. Masterpiece, Peace the Master. Such a saying that your art creates you.
Oh, know? Absolutely.
Ah, I love that.
Sure.
I forgot I wrote that. You made that line pop back up into my brain just now.
There you go.
Appreciate it, man.
There you go.
So how did you get to the point where you were doing the show? Like, how did that even happen? Because, I mean, yeah, you're doing it now and you're established in doing it, but how does that line up?
Well, this actually started way back in 1995. I was working for Wings 103.1 and as an intern, and my first chance to get on the air was to host the local show called Sunday Night Sessions, aired 9 to 10 on Sunday nights, and it was me and another guy we co-hosted. He ended up leaving that station to work at 102.7 to be Ted Nugent's board op, so I had the show all to myself. I would interview bands and stuff like that until there was a shakeup in the radio station, and basically all the weekend staff got fired, so I got fired from that, and then I just started playing in bands. Then fast forward to 2017, Sean Cantwell, program director for Solid State Radio, says, hey, I'm starting this independent, internet-based radio station. Would you like to be involved? And I said, yeah. And so I'll do a local music show. Call it Sessions. I mean, bring it over from Wings 103 days. And in addition, I also host co-host with Sean, the program director, the afternoon show called Happy Hour. And I also do... co-host a Irish music show. So I'm all over Solid State Radio, but my baby is Sessions. And I've been doing it I'm in my sixth year doing this.
Okay. Wow. And man, what is the best advice you could give to somebody who is looking to get into radio?
Don't be afraid to get out of your comfort zone. Some people will say, yeah, I want to be a big rock DJ. But if there's a radio station that has an opening for somebody who's just going to read the news or do the weather, do that. If there's some AM station off to the side that just wants somebody to read the farm stock report, do that.
Because you don't know what that opportunity is going to lead to.
It's usually you get into the business and then make the connections and work your way up through that.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just a truth of the universe itself. You know, it's not what you know, it's who you know. It plays out all the time through
very
every
much
single
so.
Life you ever see. It's right. Always who you know.
Oh, yeah.
You just can't discount it. It's for real. So it's getting your foot in that door and then meeting those people.
Yeah, most of the people that work for Solid State Radio just started out as a drinking buddy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the honest truth.
And I actually think that's a beautiful thing,
yeah.
Right? Because it's more organic that way.
Well, our Christmas parties are a hoot.
I bet they are.
what I remember of them.
Well, you know, what's great about that is you get a very, you get a real environment rather than a corporate environment. You get something where people are there for real reasons. They're there because they're passionate about what it is. And it's not like they're there just to make sure the numbers are higher this year than last year.
Exactly, yeah.
Because that makes a
I mean, we would like difference. More ratings, but, you know, the whole crew, it's that for Solid State Radio, we just, it's about fun first and foremost. And being able to reach out to the community, whether it's music or just people listening to us while they're cleaning house or doing homework or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And okay. I'm trying to think if I can get any real good questions out of you. You got any enlightening topics you think you could bust out on me?
Oh,
I bet you got something deep in your head.
Trying to think of if I was interviewing myself.
Yeah. Give me something. This is not a formal interview. It's not. I got one. So what are some of your most wild interviews? What are some of the most wild interviews you've had?
Oh, I had the band Badland out of the Saginaw area show up, and the singer, they all showed up. They knew they were going to be on camera, so they showed up in costume. The singer showed up. He's 6'2" in his own right, but then he's wearing 7-inch heels, and he's showing up. And our studio is located in a kind of like a mall area. It's not like a Genesee Valley Mall, but it's a bunch of different other businesses. And there's a big plate glass window in front of our studio. And so there's a bunch of people who are there to get their nails done and a massage or something like that. They're walking by and seeing the menagerie that's in the studio. Yeah. We've had a couple times where I brought in a Slumlord Radio out of Grand Rapids. And I said, yeah, come on over, and what do you guys like to drink? And he was joking. He said, Mickey's. So I had a couple 40s of Mickey's, and we downed that, and I don't remember much about that interview. We got tanked. We did. I mean, that's a common occurrence, unfortunately, but that's what it is. But, I mean,
are these on record, though?
Oh,
are there places people can still find these?
Oh, yeah. You can go to solidstateradio.net, click on the On Demand tab, but you can also, if you want to see it in living, breathing color, you can go to Sessions Facebook page, Solid State Sessions, and just go to the videos and just have a ball.
So you are just there's no holds barred in these interviews.
I try not to. I have to start watching my language. I used to be like okay, language is fine, just no C word, no racial stuff. Don't get me canceled. But now, back in November of this past year, Sessions was picked up by 97.7 FM WTGV in the Santa Lake broadcasting area. So I have to kind of watch my language.
Oh.
I mean,
is it in the contract? There's nothing you can do about it?
Well, it's an FCC thing, so we want to make sure that we don't get anybody in any kind of trouble. So there's been some slip-ups, but luckily our program director, he's quick on it, so he's able to, like, because, I mean, if it's on Solid State, because we do the interviews live. If it's on Solid State Radio, that's fine. It's internet. It's not controlled by the FCC. But then later on, it's rebroadcast on TGV. Then we have to, like, make sure that we bleep out any bad words.
So it's not pre-recorded, though. Like, you do it live.
We do it live.
On the radio.
On Solid State Radio on the internet.
So you can censor it and then put it out censored.
Correct.
So you can still swear.
Yeah, but my program director, he's like, I can't believe you guys are saying, you know how much work that is for me? And he's like, yeah,
I
know.
Yeah, dude, you're right. I don't know. Cause it's tough. Cause when you start censoring, then that becomes a thing. Like, unless you're really good at it, you start to not say certain jokes and you lose a little bit of, well, especially if you're drinking and you're having a good time. Like,
especially when I get people talking about their music, they get so animated. The next thing they're like, oh, that was effing great. And that was effing. I was like, oh, F.
No F's. I told you no F's.
It's right here.
There's a big sign. No F's.
Don't say fuck.
Right off camera. Yeah.
Right off camera. But I mean, so many great, any great moment I have in the interview, it's when somebody is telling me a song. It's like they're presenting their child.
Yeah.
Especially if it's a song that really hits hard, you know, it hits their lives. Somebody writing a song about father who had passed away, and it's like, you know, that hits me at home. So it's just like trying to, okay, sessions on Solid State Radio, you know, trying to choke things back, and as, you know, somebody's pouring their heart out, and that can make for some interesting radio for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's that thing where you're following their lead again, too, because you can't even... What I love about those moments is you can't expect them. There's no way you can manufacture them. It just happens in that moment.
Yep.
It's a beautiful thing when you get those. And again, it's just giving them the platform and the avenue for them to have that, because it's probably a great moment for them too, just to be able to share that. I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot when you get those out of people. And if they let out a little F-bomb or two, there's no way you could stop them.
No, it's off to Mars. I mean, we'll just have to wrap it up in post. But yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna chastise my guest in front of me. You know, maybe during the break, I'm like, can you kind of calm it down a little bit? But it's not a game change. It's not a game breaker or anything like that. Nobody's gonna get in any kind of trouble from us.
No, just a stern talking to in the commercial break.
No. No more whiskey for you. Because I was telling you, we have quite the liquor section. People just bring bottles, like of usually whiskey, but it's just like we have a situation where we had a 2 gallon or gallon of like Jameson Irish whiskey that was 60 years old that Drew, who it's his birthday today. Happy birthday, Drew. He runs the Blarney Hour. And he brought that in, and we were chugging on that for weeks. But he brings in this like little slot machine, and that's filled with whiskey. He brings in like, a little football guy, porcelain football. That's filled with whiskey. It's like everything's filled with whiskey now. It's like there's a small fire in the station. Don't grab the fire extinguisher. It's filled with Maker's Mark.
Wow, it's like whiskey land.
Yeah, yeah.
Willy Wonka's Whiskey Factory. Has there ever been so much whiskey in one location? God only knows.
Well, like I was saying, people walk by they'll see us doing radio-like things, but a lot of times they'll just like look at this big old baker's rack just full of whiskey bottles and just start laughing.
Like a spice rack.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, whiskey's never been for me is the strange part. Really? Is it what you go for? Whiskey?
That has been my go-to. When I was in a band called St. Pauli Street for many years, and our singer, he was big into Jack Daniels, and he kind of turned me on to that. So I was a Jack Daniels fan for the longest time. But then now I started hanging out with the guys from Solid State Radio, and some of us formed an unofficial whiskey club where we each pitch in like $25. So there was like 5 of us. Get a big expensive bottle of scotch or Irish whiskey or bourbon, and we would try that. I really like bourbon a little too much. I've actually backed away from the bourbon, but I do like myself some bourbon. Not a scotch fan.
Now, is it the feeling that you get when you drink it? Is that what you like so much about it?
The feeling afterwards, yeah. But after about a third or fourth one, then I don't like the feeling that much anymore. But I like the warm, nutty, smoky taste of a good bourbon. It's soothing.
Maybe I just haven't had a very good bourbon.
You might not have, or it just may not be. It's not for everybody. Like, there's a lot of people that like scotch. I'm not a scotch fan. Vodka, some people who drink vodka straight, I just think that's weird, because vodka for me has always been like a mixer. So
I used to drink vodka straight, but that was in my adolescence before I even understood what the power of vodka was. Like, that's way better.
That's during the college years at Churchill's and, you know, a dance party or something like that. Yeah, I've been there. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm talking more elementary school.
Elementary school. wrap my tricycle around a tree with that one.
Yeah. Like, mom and dad, that was not water in that water bottle. I'll tell you that much. But yeah, it was an interesting time. I just, it, mainly just because it was all I had access to. I mean, with those crazy circumstances I was in back in the day. It was just the way I could do it. I just would, I wasn't even thinking about mixing it with things. And
right.
Nowadays, maybe I'll take a shot, maybe once every 10 years, once in a blue moon, literally, like rarely.
Sure.
But a mixed drink, if someone offered me like even those, they have crazy flavored shots. Like,
oh,
those,
sure.
Those little candy shot things.
Oh,
what
yeah.
do you call those?
Yeah.
Is it just a shot? You call it a
shot?
Yeah,
you just call it a shot. Yeah, but I mean, yeah, you're talking about like a fuzzy navel or I don't know. There's so many of them. Yeah, they're, because there's people that will make up a shot that night. Let's just put this together. Let's put this together and we'll call it this. Okay, great. You can do that.
You could probably, like, even simple as just pouring vodka in there, getting a green Jolly Rancher, and then maybe like a little bit of lime for flavor, and you just made yourself a shot right there.
Yep.
Something like that. It's
something
that easy.
Something like that. Yep. It's that easy.
But the flavor in just that little shot will blow you away compared to if you just had the one shot of vodka, and that's why you don't do it. And it's also that the shot of vodka, yeah, sure, you can get really nice vodka, but you use that really nice vodka in that shot I just described.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you can get some real cheap vodka, and it feels like you just downed nail polish remover.
Yeah.
But, I mean, same thing with, like, cheap whiskey. Cheap whiskey is just, you know it's cheap. It tastes cheap. It tastes synthetic. It tastes, it tastes like it's made to hurt. And it should be something to enjoy. I mean, like the people that just drink like moonshine, I wanted to say, what is wrong with, who hurt you? I mean, why would you do that to yourself?
Yeah. Moonshine reflects something within. Those people got daddy issues or something. Something's going on if you're drinking moonshine.
Like, something.
Oh, my God. Show me the scars.
Somebody got left in a hot car.
Yeah, because for real, I mean, also absinthe, you ever have that?
I have
that
not.
Stuff is, it's now, don't get me wrong, it's expensive for a reason. It's not like, it's not necessarily even bad. It's almost like when you eat like Persian food or some strange spice that you're not used to. It's like, whoa, what the heck is that?
I have some friends who call me every wimpy name they can think of. Because I refuse to try absinthe because I've never heard anybody, oh, yeah, I had absinthe and it was a wonderful time. We were drinking absinthe while hunting and my friend fell out of a tree and blamed it. He could feel his legs and was blaming me. And
it's not as strong as moonshine, I don't think, getting there. It's very strong.
I hear about the green fairy and hallucinating. I'm like, that's not for me.
Oh, see, I don't even know about that. I need to look more into this.
Well,
it's a hallucinogen?
I guess there was some. It used to be. I heard that now absinthe that you can get in the United States lacks a couple ingredients that you could get like in Eastern Europe that would knock you out. And a lot of people talked about, you know, the green fairy and hallucinating and I just don't try. Especially like, you talk to people absinthe. Oh, you gotta like heat it and you gotta drizzle it over a sugar cube. I'm like, that just sounds like too much work.
I just took a shot of it. Maybe I did it all wrong.
Yeah, man. You didn't get the full experience.
Yeah.
Which is probably a good thing.
There's no drizzling involved.
Yeah. Yeah. I stay away from absinthe.
There's a lot of alcohols I haven't even tried. I mean, when I think about it too, because we're just describing one obscure alcohol. There's probably plenty out there.
No.
I mean, do you know any off the top of your head?
My stepfather is a fan of ouzo.
Whoa.
A Greek. And it will catch on fire. I found that out.
Reminds me of mead, too. Mead's another one. It's mead. Not super uncommon, but you don't see it often. But tell me more about ouzo before we get into mead.
Ouzo is black licorice, kind of clear liqueur, Greek oriented. And it's okay, but it's like you don't really see people in the Midwest ordering ouzo. I mean, we can go down to, you know, I'm sure they got it over at a Torch or something like that. I'm sure they got ouzo, but they'd be like, oh, I think we got it. Let's brush the dust off of it. We'll see what we can do with it.
Yeah. 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 It's like a rarity. It's like when you order off the secret menu at McDonald's. And then we got mead, which you'll see at, you will see that at Renaissance festivals at the very least. I know that much.
Yep. Mead is starting to make a comeback with like a lot of the hipsters. I know I have a friend of mine who he brews his own beer. And he's to the point where he grows his own hops, his own barley. And he's sitting there one day, he's like, I think I'm going to try my hand at making a mead. And I'm like, ha ha, You can't make mead without honey, and you want to be all locally sourced. You're like, you make your own stuff, huh? 2 weeks later, he told me, I bought a hive.
What?
He bought a hive.
No.
It shut me up.
My man became a beekeeper. Yeah. What?
Yeah, he did.
That's a commitment right there.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if you go to your buddy's house 3 weeks later, and 3 weeks ago he didn't have 100 bees in his backyard, and now he does. Now he does.
You're sitting in his front yard, you smack one, he's like, no, Charlie, no. He's got them all named. You son of a bitch.
He starts crying.
You killed him. You killed him. Go home.
Yeah, that could be. That could
no
be
meat
a whole...
for you.
Yeah, no meat for you. Man. Wow. I didn't even think of that, though. So you need honey for mead. It actually sounds delicious, then.
It's good.
Wow, I love me some honey.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Okay. And then beyond that, I don't know. I'm not even that much of a drinker. I'm really not.
It's really not a health. I drink too much. I need to, like, lose some weight. And that one of my things is besides overeating and having a wife that really knows how to cook, is I like my beer. I really do enjoy my beer.
I prefer beer over everything else.
Sure.
When I do drink.
Sure.
So I can feel that.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's just casual. That's what's so great about a beer. It's so easy to crack open a beer and just drink a beer.
Yeah.
Not like other things where it's like, hey, let's drink.
Exactly. I mean, you could get a six-pack and split a six-pack with a friend watching a game or something like that, but, you know, a bottle of whiskey, there's an intent.
Yeah, it changes. The whole thing is different. Yeah. And I think it's the beauty and the danger of beer. It's both.
Yeah, because beer can, you can have like one or two beers, sip on it, and be totally fine. But next thing you know, if you're just playing cards or you're talking with some friends around a campfire, next thing you know, it's like, wow, I downed six of these and I can't feel my feet.
Yeah. Whoa, I'm 20 Bud Lights in.
Where'd all our beer go?
Right.
As you're just swimming through beer cans. Yeah, we've been there.
So,
absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, kids. Just be careful, kids. This podcast is obviously for children. So
yeah, yes. Yes. Just eat your vegetables, say your prayers. No, I think if you can take anything away from this episode, like, because we talked about different things, is moderation.
Moderation 100%. I mean I preach that. For sure, with everything. I mean, I think people don't even say that. People look at substances like they're not substances. People do this with three great examples I can think of would be, I'll do two. Caffeine and marijuana, both of those. Marijuana more so people look at like a substance, but most of the users do not.
Right.
And caffeine is just a universal example that most of us can understand.
Sure.
I mean, I'm sipping coffee right now. People don't think of it as a substance, but it truly is. It truly does alter your perception. And you need to do that in moderation, too. You can't be drinking coffee at 8 p.m. at night and expect to be sleeping perfectly.
Right.
It just doesn't exist.
If you, those people who drink coffee, or in my case, Coca-Cola, another thing I got to cut back on, if you pull that out of your diet and you don't have that caffeine, there is some withdrawal issues. But a lot of people, they have that with pride. Don't talk to me until I've had my coffee.
Mm-hmm.
They'll have like sweatshirts as, you know, no talkie until coffee or something like that. But yeah, I mean, with caffeine as a drug, caffeine's something that should be in moderation as well.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Just because you go too far in one direction on anything and then all of a sudden you're saying things like, don't talk to me until I've had my coffee. And you are literally relying on it to be the person that you want to be. You don't think that exists without the substance.
Right.
I mean, marijuana, the reason I mention that is just because I think people are coming around. I hear this sentiment more and more often nowadays where it's people are recognizing that there is a balance. It's not just like smoke weed every day and it's totally great. I think maybe a lot of people come into it thinking that because it's something they just discovered. But I think it's better if we as a culture can all say, like, it's not, in my experience at the very least, marijuana is best when you use it in correct spurts, or if you use it with self-consciousness when, when you think, okay, what have I gotten done today? Because it's a very easy way for you to not do anything. There's a reason Afro Man wrote the song, because I got high.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it does kill inhibition in this strange way, but not if you're a fairly determined person and you know how to structure your life in a way where with that marijuana, you will get things done.
If you have willpower, that is going to trump any kind of overdoing anything. I have very little willpower. I know that I'm an extreme kind of person to where if doing something once is good, then let's do it three times. It's probably going to be better. So yeah. I don't smoke weed, and it's not because I feel like it's bad. I just know me. I would be the one that, okay, I got to go to work. Let me puff on this for a little bit. But, I mean, I also grew up in a time where there was still, and there's still a stigma about weed, but back in my day in junior high, we had the whole Just Say No program. Nancy Reagan got on her soapbox and, you know, no drugs, don't say drugs. I mean, that bitch robbed me a lot of good times because I probably could have been getting high and
relaxing
a little bit. Yeah, now I'm thinking, oh my God, somebody's smoking weed. Their life's going right down the toilet. But everybody smoked weed. Everybody. Come to find out, you know, I end up living next door to my 10th, who used to be my 10th grade English teacher, walked outside. Oh my God, Mrs. Carter was lighting up. And it's just like, but I mean, it's like, you know, like the whole idea of this episode of your podcast is in moderation, learn about it, know it. And if it fits into your life, go ahead. Especially now that there's been legislation that has opened it up a little bit. Truthfully, I probably would try it just to kind of take the edge off a lot of the stress and everything else. But I also, my day job has a zero tolerance kind of thing, so that they still fall under that stigma that weed is a bad drug.
I think, well, speaking on moderation, I firmly believe that we should look at marijuana like alcohol in most senses, and in that sense too, like because it's a substance that alters the way we think. So of course, it should be looked at in that way, but also in the sense that it's probably less harmful than alcohol. In a matter of fact, we know it is. We know it's less harmful. So when it comes to jobs and things like this, like really?
Right.
So I can drink outside my workplace, but I can't smoke outside my workplace.
Yeah, let's go grab a beer or something like that, as opposed to, hey boss, you want to go toke down? Because, I mean, they've decided that smoking weed actually has some positive mental and physical attributes. A lot of people said that smoking rotted the brain. Now they're finding out that a lot of times smoking will regenerate brain cells, or at least calm you down to where you can. It helps with your mental stability.
Yeah, there's a neuroscientist, Andrew Huberman. Shout out him, dream guest on the podcast. He's got a great one himself, Huberman Lab, and he's got a great episode about marijuana. And one of the ways he described it, just about the way we our brain works, is that we're thinking divergently when we smoke, as opposed to when we're sober, we think convergently. So we're able to combine all these ideas and bring things together. Mm-hmm. And when we think divergently, we're able to branch out and have new fundamental ideas that we didn't have before. And I mean, I've experienced that so many times where I'll have a problem in my life. Like, I'm thinking about it, like, oh, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And I think, oh, maybe if I smoke, I'll just calm myself down. I smoke, and all of a sudden, the problem's not even a problem anymore, because I got this brand new perspective, and I realize, oh, I was stressing out over nothing.
Yeah, why am I worried
about
this?
And I can't forget that smoking made me feel that way.
Right.
Like, it actually changed the way I was thinking about it. So that definitely is a thing. And that's why people say it's a medicine, because, of course, there's also the physical aspect of it, but definitely, even just the way that you look at things, it'll definitely ease your mind, and just more of a let it be type of mindset, rather than a, oh, things aren't going right, I better fix this type of thing. You definitely see that in a lot of people. So
then you also, some people are like, okay, we're winning the war with pot, let's keep that going. There's a lot of people who want to lobby to completely deregulate mushrooms. And I don't know how to feel about that one. I've never been on shrooms.
Oh, dude. Okay. So I will phrase everything I say here properly. There's a guy I know. And there's a guy I know who's had plenty of mushroom trips, all right? And this guy tells me that he wouldn't be who he is today if it weren't for these psychedelic experiences that he's had. He tells me that it's opened his perspective and allowed him to think beyond himself in ways that he never could beforehand.
Okay.
In a way that a substance like THC could not provide, because it's really, THC is a light psychedelic experience. And I would also say that my friend told me too that mushrooms are way more preferable to LSD, just in the sense that, you know, it is a naturally reproducing thing. It's very easy for people to even grow them. Like, it's not like these things are hard to find in nature. And so the experiences one can have when they are in that state, I feel as if they're so fundamental. Like, they're so fundamentally gratifying. It's like, I can tell you one experience this guy had, one revelation this guy had, and it's actually a revelation I told you about earlier. It's weird. Me and this guy line up really, really well. So this guy told me that he had this revelation on about 3.5 grams of mushrooms just sitting there. He realized he's putting all these barriers in his own way, and really his life purpose, the reason he's here, is to shine light on other people, to put light in other people's lives, whether that's giving them a platform, whether that's providing light for them, or that's shining that positivity that that person has inherently in their heart upon other people. That's my life purpose. That's what he said. And that realization, and that we all have something like that. We all have superpowers. We all have some way of doing that, some way of giving a piece of ourselves to the world that does provide some type of purpose that can, that, and we put barriers in front of ourselves and we find reasons not to use those superpowers.
That's fantastic.
And I would not, I'm sorry, he would not have came to this realization had he not taken that substance. And that realization still sits with him today. And it carries him forward through the decisions that he makes. And so I would never say that everyone needs to try X. I don't think of it that way. I just think that in his experience, when I hear these stories, I know for a fact that it has provided him a perspective he could never have otherwise.
There you go.
And it's just because of the power of what mushrooms can do, what psilocybin is. It's a very crazy thing, man. I recommend, even if you ever think about dabbling into it, just look into the stories people have and the different just research. Just do your research, be like you would with your Facebook rabbit hole. Just dive into a mushroom Facebook rabbit hole, because I'm telling you, it goes real deep. And to me, what a lot of that stuff says too is it just speaks to the idea of things being larger than life, and the fact that we can have these fundamental experiences and these crazy ground life-breaking things. Like, we don't even, ground-shattering, life-breaking, perception-altering things, where we can't even find the words to properly describe the experience. To me, that's what life is all about, is that beauty, the mysticism of the moment. Like, there's so much more beyond us than what we're seeing in the present moment. And we lose sight of that as we grow older, and we just deal with more stuff. But as a kid, you know that. That life's beautiful, and that it's just a cool thing to wake up and you want to go hang out with your friends and all that. So I think that substances like that often even just kind of, you often hear about a reset type of feeling that people have, like they almost were reborn, or they come out feeling this completely different way. And it's not usually a negative thing. Like they recommend it for PTSD now, mm-hmm. and a depression. You often hear it about it being talked about as a treatment for depression.
Yep.
It actually is legal in Ann Arbor. You can buy some in Ann Arbor, but you have to either buy it in person. I don't know if you have to be a resident. I don't think you do, but I think you can't order it online, of course. You have to get it in person. I think that's what it is. And then there's a couple other places around the United States, but I know at least in Michigan, it's in Ann Arbor.
Hmm.
So it's interesting, man. I support it. I say all of this to say I support it just because the medicinal benefits are crazy when you actually look into just the differences that even scientists are testing in labs now.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much going on that it's almost a shame, similar to THC, that we spent so much time not even looking to the potential benefits of these things. There's so much, because what if you could completely... What if you could have a 60% curve on depression from one substance? Can you imagine that? If you could just give everybody this one pill and all of a sudden depression disappears 60%?
Depression is a big thing in this country right now.
It would change the world if we could it would change the entire country if we could lower depression that much. Even by 20%, it would change the entire country. So
absolutely,
that's why I support something like that. It's actually it's amazing how much people benefit from one or two high dose experiences. They carry it with them for years. It's mind blowing the fact that that's even possible to me. It's magic. It's real life magic. So they're magic mushrooms.
That's right, magic shrooms.
The world has magic in it. And you know what, people? You know what the problem is? Is they get a little taste of magic and they don't know a thing about moderation. That's the problem.
Yep.
Is people get a little touch of magic and then they don't know how to moderate it. And that's the moral of today's podcast. I'm bringing it around town, you see?
Yeah, moderation.
You got to moderate your magic, folks.
That's right.
I mean, I suppose this is a beautiful podcast right here. I suppose we did it real nice. Are you? You're not on a time frame, are you? I'm not sure because I know you told me beforehand you got that going on.
I've got a show. I got to get prepared for. I got two shows I got to prepare for. Sessions is on tonight and Saturday nights. That's my favorite. I love all the radio I do, but Saturday nights is just magical. 9 to midnight. I sit in the studio, pour myself a little glass of whiskey and some beer, and do it up. Crank the music. But I gotta get ready for that. It's my friend's birthday, so
9 to midnight. You just get to sit there, crank the music, and just chill.
Oh yeah.
Oh, bro, that sounds fantastic.
Well, when you pay Michigan a visit, come hang out with me, and we'll have a good time.
Yeah, man. And what were you gonna say? What else are you doing today?
It's my friend's birthday, and also, oh yeah, my wife is working on my brakes. It's funny because it's like total reversal. Like the other day, she was working on the brakes in her car and stuff like that, and I'm cooking dinner. I'm like, well, I better have dinner on the table before honey comes home. But, you know, I mean, there are no gender roles anymore. So, but yeah, we were driving around Flint yesterday, and my one right brake was just grinding. She's like, your brake's grinding. I was like, is that what that noise was? She's like, God damn it. So, yeah. So she's, I gotta buy the brakes so she can do that.
Yeah, and he's going to walk in, and he's going to say, hey, honey, these are the brakes. All right, thank you guys so much. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for watching. Appreciate you. If you stuck around through this whole thing, you're awesome. Go do something even cooler than this. All right, that's what we do it for. We want to see you shine, folks. With all that being said, Ruse Radio, clocking out.